Hey, everybody. This weekend, December 13th and 14th, I'm going to be at Go Bananas Comedy Club in Cincinnati. So if you live in the area, come on out. Great club. Always a good time. Go online to get tickets. Go Bananas Comedy Club, December 13th and 14th. And had an interesting last couple of days. Our dog, Daisy, ate pot. Got it on the street, we think. You know, she got a dealer, I guess. No, seriously, ate pot and has been high for the last 2 days. And it's interesting because she's high just like a person is in all respects. Like, she's just constantly sleeping. She's drinking a lot of water. She's thirsty. She's eating a lot. The only difference is when a person is high, no matter how high you are, you'll get up and go to the bathroom in the bathroom. Not Daisy. She's just peeing wherever she's lying down. That's how high she is. So we have wee pads all over the house. And it looks like a nursing home in our house, basically. And we have a dog that has eaten pot, and now it's a gateway drug, and she's whining for cocaine. So we got a big problem on our hands. All right, my guest this week, Elizabeth Perkins, great actress. You know her from Big, Miracle on 34th Street. She's in the new Fox miniseries, The Moody's, with Dennis Leary. Really cool conversation with her. Someone I really admire and admired her work, so I was psyched to have her on the show. All right, enjoy Elizabeth Perkins, and send me a note through Facebook at Paul Mercurio or a tweet at Paul Mercurio. What I do about my high dog? How do I fix this problem? All right, enjoy Elizabeth. My guest is a very accomplished actress and someone that I really admired for a long, long time. Not in a creepy way, like a stalker way, just like an admired her work kind of way. You've seen her in roles like Big, The Flintstones, Miracle on 34th Street, and her award-nominated role, Celia Hodes, I'm sorry, in Weeds. And also, it got two really great projects coming out in just a second. We're going to talk about them. It's Elizabeth Perkins. Great to have you on the show. Thanks for being on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
So you have two projects. You've been very busy. You have Truth Be Told, which is currently airing on Apple TV. And that's focuses on a true crime podcaster who's called on to investigate the case of a serial killer. And you play her mom. What sort of drew you to that? It seems like a pretty intense kind of show.
It was being produced by Reese Witherspoon and her company, Hello Sunshine. So that was originally how I heard about the project. Starring Octavia Spencer, who's just a phenomenal talent. We have Aaron Paul, who plays the man that Poppy is trying to get out of jail through her podcast. It's very much like the podcast Serial. So we have Lizzie Kaplan, Ron Cephas Jones. So immediately I was attracted to the cast. I play Aaron Paul's mother, who has spent the last 19 years of her life trying to get him out. He was sentenced at 17. So he's spent more than half of his life in prison. And it's really an exploration of how the sensationalization of sort of these true crime explorations, a la The Making of a Murderer, what kind of impact does that have for the families that are involved in these cases? And it's a side of that sensationalization that we don't really talk about. And
you know, it's funny
that it came at it from that take.
Yeah, it's funny because I just the Richard Jewell film is out or about to come out, and they were interviewing his mom, the real life mom, and she said almost the exact same words. Like, you know, they essentially spent most of their life, even though he was exonerated and it was Eric Rudolph and someone else, that it took a tremendous toll on the family. He died at 44 of a heart attack, and supposedly she feels like that sort of contributed to it in a big way, but it was very, very similar in terms of what she said. And like their whole life was sort of focused around that event, unfortunately, and that had to be debilitating. And I know you're a mother, and you've actually said, and I don't know if this quote isn't accurate, but you said, my nickname among my a group of my friends' mother, and I tend to take care of everybody. I don't know if that you brought you. so you brought some of that to the role.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I can't imagine one of your children being arrested for a murder they didn't commit.
Yeah.
Much less being sent to the federal penitentiary for the past 19 years. I mean, how do you go about your life? How do you say, okay, well, now I'm going to get in the car, I'm going to go to the grocery store, and then I'm going to pick up the cleaning, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. How do you have any joy in your life? How do you go on from that? I mean, it's one thing when you lose somebody or when they pass away, but to have somebody just taken from you and placed behind bars, she has no life. Her whole life is waiting for him to come home. And her whole existence is about getting him out. And that's it.
It must
go out and have a good time with her friends.
Right. And it must have been a fun role for you in the sense that there's a lot of, I would imagine, as the mom, you've got to be supportive and buck up, as they say, and, you know, put on a brave face. But then there's all these other emotions going on behind that. That had to be a fun challenge for you, I would imagine, as an actor.
Yeah, well, it was also, my character is very, very ill. She has a disease and her time is limited.
Right.
And so it's even more important to her right now to get him out before, you know, something might terrible happen to her. So she's, when she's contacted by Poppy Parnell, who's played by Octavia Spencer, she's willing to do anything to help Poppy get him out.
You know, you said something a couple of minutes ago, it sort of resonated with me that, you know, we seem to, especially with the political landscape being what it is now, it just seems like sensationalism is the prime objective in our culture right now. And truth is secondary, right? Like, and we have people just literally lying to the camera and other people just backing up.
Well, one of the things that I loved about this is that it really puts reporting, you know, and especially in the true crime genre, under a microscope, you know, and shows how journalism can have a real and sometimes devastating effect on a case, you know, and it sort of forces the viewer to ask themselves how reporting can actually drive the narrative.
Right.
And in this case, ultimately the verdict.
Yeah.
The case. And I think that that's very timely in terms of our news reporting and what the gaslighting is going
and,
on.
And yeah, exactly. And the power of podcasting is so intense now that, and there's no, there's no governor, there's no police, there's no editorial board, there's no editor. Right. If I say something is sensational about you, I don't have to run that by anybody. And then someone just clicks on it and they send their link to their friend. And the next thing you know, you got 500,000 people believing something I said. And so it's absolutely.
It's very omnipresent and in all forms of media, you know, including investigative journalism.
Yeah.
And this show attempts to sort of explore how that impacts our lives and our daily conversations.
Yeah. It's really, really timely on a lot of levels. And then you've got also another timely project, the Moody's, which is fun dysfunctionality around the holidays.
But the 180.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, let me get away from this intense stuff and just
180. Yeah. I can't believe they're actually coming out together in the same week.
That's on Fox.
Two sides of my brain.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was fun to see you in that kind of role. It was sort of different for me to, you know, I've always liked your work and, you know, you've done a lot of interesting stuff, but to see you kind of make Dennis Leary go back on his heels and scare him was pretty great, you know, he's a tough guy, you know.
I adore him.
Yeah.
We actually grew up about 35 miles away from each other. So, you know, I know where this guy's from.
Yeah.
And we have such a similar acerbic wit. You know, we're both extremely sarcastic people and we just hit it off immediately. But I knew we would.
Yeah, well, you grew up in Vermont. I know you were three. I grew up in Rhode Island, so I'm a fellow New Englander. Yeah, yeah, Providence.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, my wife and I grew up there, went to high school together, and we've still been together.
Oh,
and then,
nice.
Yeah, and then used to ski up, and you had your dad, I believe, had a farm, a 600-acre farm in Brattleboro or near Brattleboro. We used to go up there all the time. We used to go up there and get drunk at my friend's father's house and go skiing drunk and all of that good stuff, which you do.
We did that all through high school.
Exactly. We would drive. I swear to God, every time we'd get in my Nova, which was like a complete, you know, bombed out car, and we'd go up and we'd have like a case of you're not supposed to do this anymore, but you had like a case of beer and other things in the car, and then the skis, and then invariably it was always snowing when we get. And so by the time we got to Vermont, you know, there were huge snow banks. And we were just no snow tires. So we were just sliding into like snow drifts. Yeah, exactly. Sliding into snow drifts. We get out of the car. We push it out. It was just the most.
Yeah. You're wearing just a light jacket, too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, you have so much alcohol in you.
4 feet of snow.
Exactly. You know, when you went to Chicago to study acting, was that like a big culture shock to go from, you know, Vermont to...
Oh, completely.
But were you excited about it, though? Or did you go
absolutely
kicking and screaming?
Absolutely. You know, when you grow up on a farm, you know, when the train pulled into Chicago, and it was like a Mary Tyler Moore moment, you know, it was throwing my hat in this. I couldn't wait to get off the farm.
That's great.
I was like, look, there's trains and people.
Yeah. Did you, were there?
Loved it. And Chicago is still one of my favorite cities.
A great city. I went there with my son. We did a dad, son weekend, and we went to a Chicago Cubs game, and we did all the touristy stuff.
I love it up there at Wrigley.
Yeah. We went to Lou Malnati's and had pizza and all the good stuff. You know, it was great.
Nice.
Yeah.
You did it up. You did it in Chicago.
You know, you can order that on Amazon. You can order their pizzas frozen.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really good. It comes really.
It can't possibly be as good.
I'm telling you, it's very. I'm Italian.
Really?
I'm telling you right now, it's very close to getting it in the restaurant.
Someone has to check that out.
Yeah, absolutely. I was curious though, like when you you did Miracle on 34th Street, and I thought it was a really well done remake. When you remake a classic, as an actor, in terms of your, I'm a kind of a process geek, like. How do you, I would imagine you had to see it growing up or know about it. So how do you not that actress's interpretation of that role bleed into yours? Like, how do you bring something new to it?
Well, in this case, the actress was Maureen O'Hara.
Mm.
So anything she can give me, I'll take.
There you go.
For real. I mean, she's just such an icon and so amazing. I think with our remake, we were really fortunate to have Sir Richard Attenborough play Kris Kringle. And, you know, this is the guy who directed Gandhi.
Yeah.
So every day on the set, I would just stare at him. And sometimes I'd be acting and he'd do something and I'd completely forget my line because I was so staring at him. And I think he brought a level of professionalism and talent that I think it's why it works.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of remakes don't. And
because
I think
he grounded it. He was able to ground it.
Absolutely. And Mara Wilson as the young girl was, I mean, what a talent she was, you know, and I think the two of them together just elevated it.
Mm.
And,
when you did the Moody's,
there was that fear of like, oh, we're making a bad version of it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
People, you know, say, oh, well, I only watch the original and that's fine. You know, I get it. But I think we did a great job. And it's
no, I think you did.
Film.
Yeah, I'm kind of a sap for Christmas stuff. I love it and I watch it all. And I thought you guys, and I do tend to sort of go, why are you remaking? You know what I mean? Like, I'm one of those people. Like,
I know, me too.
Yeah,
me too.
But I thought you guys did a really, really good job. How was it, you know, this Moody's show was a three, It's a three-episode miniseries, if you will. And so how is that in terms of approaching it as an actor? So what the arc of the character, right, is kind of limited, right? So it's not like Weeds where, you know, you could really go places with that character over a period of time. Is this approaching this more like a film because it's, you know, you've got a limited amount of time for this character to sort of have its beginning, middle, and an end?
Yeah, we shot it very much like a film. We didn't shoot, you know, say we're shooting episode one, now we're shooting episode two, now we're shooting episode three. We shot it the way you would shoot a movie. Mm-hmm. You know, as you go to one location, you shoot everything that takes place there, and then you go to another location, shoot that. So we shot it almost like a small little independent movie. But I think all of us who are involved, our hope with it is that that people fall in love with this family. Mm. One of the ideas is to do sort of 3 hours episodes around events in this family's life. And we start with Christmas because it's Christmas, and that tends to bring a lot of tension and stresses and unwanted, annoying uncles with it. But, you know, this hopefully could go into, you know, it's the Moody's Easter, or the Moody's go on vacation, or the Moody's have a funeral, or some, you know, there's a wedding.
Yeah.
So we all sort of wanted to sort of set it up as, this is the family, and here we go.
Yeah.
We have Dennis Leary and Jay Baruchel, and we just have good people.
Yeah. No, it's so, and the chemistry that you guys have is great.
Yeah.
And did you like sort of, I mean, we all have dysfunction in our family, especially around the holidays. Were you able to bring some of that? I assume you have some in your life. Were you able to bring some of that to the role? Did you change anything?
No, I have
anything?
Absolutely no dysfunction in my family at all.
You're the perfect person.
Well, yeah. I also think that we get set up as people, as a society, by the constant Christmas references everywhere you go. Like, you need the perfect throw pillow. You need the perfect to make your holiday perfect. You need this, you need that, you need this. And you know, you get home and you're like, well, my family's screaming at each other, grandma's drunk, you know, my son hasn't gotten out of bed in 3 days, and you know, the reality for people is a lot different.
Yeah, it's so funny you should say that.
Hopefully this is a much more relatable, truthful observation of family at Christmas.
Yeah, that's why I love it. You know, it's funny because my brother just texted me. They live in Rhode Island, my sister and my brother, everybody, because nobody moves out of Rhode Island. It's too far to drive,
right,
God forbid. And I live in New York. And so I do stand up and I work on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and I travel a lot. And I'm like, I said to my wife, Carol, like, I don't want to go up to Rhode Island. I just want to sit in my house, eat food and watch TV at Christmas. I don't want to talk to anybody, whatever. I get a text.
That's what I'm doing this Christmas.
Oh my God. I got to take my 93-year-old mother, I think, down here because my brother's going away and he can't have her over for the house. So I got to take my insane mother down to New York, and like, I'm like, and it doesn't feel like Christmas. It feels like a job, you know? So, listen, I know you got to go. Yeah, I could talk to you all day.
I
really enjoyed
that.
Well, it's really been a treat talking to you. Thank you for being on. Great luck with the projects.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Don't kill anybody at Christmas. We know how that can be.
I'll try.
All right. Elizabeth Perkins, everybody.
Okay. Thank you so much.
There you go, guys. Elizabeth Perkins, really, really cool actress. Great, great person to talk to. This weekend, December 13th and 14th, I'm going to be at Go Bananas Comedy Club in Cincinnati. So come on out, check out a show. And you go online to get tickets, Go Bananas. And we will see you next week.